look at the harmonic oscillator. Now, you've probably all seen the quantum harmonic oscillator before. And I'm actually going to take it as given that you've at least had some exposure to maybe the normal, the usual way of doing it, which is solving the quantum harmonic oscillator in the position representation. And so looking at wave functions in terms of Hermite polynomials, and then some properties of the spectrum. That's a pretty standard undergraduate quantum physics thing to do, is see where those Hermite polynomials come up as a solution of a differential equation. You write down some oscillating wave functions for a harmonic oscillator, and then you never look at it again because no one really cares what the wave functions for the harmonic oscillator look like. But that's not to say that we don't care about the harmonic oscillator. In fact, it is a key canonical example of a quantum system that we use all the time. And what we're going to do today is look at a different approach to studying the formalism of that harmonic oscillator, using an algebraic approach rather than one of wave functions and differential equations. It will introduce some new tools, but it sort of gives you some exposure of a whole range of things that people have looked at for a variety of systems in terms of studying them from properties of an algebra that might allow them to generate the spectrum from some fiducial state like the ground state, algebraic properties that might then allow them to calculate properties like expectation values or other observables without having to resort to a bunch of properties of square integral functions on the real line. Yep?
Can you tell us what the word fiducial means? I don't know what that means.
Fiducial is like sort of like a standard example, like, or that, you know, I'm just going to pick one thing. It's maybe not necessarily preferred, but we make it preferred by choosing it as the starting point or the basic point. At least that's how I use the term. Maybe if you look up the definition, it means something entirely different from that. What does Wikipedia say?
Assumed as a fixed basis of comparison. Okay. Yeah. So as you select.
Yeah. So the key with doing, with say picking a fiducial state is it's a choice. But then once we pick that, everything else is defined sort of relative to it. Okay, so good question. So maybe some of you have started studies of the quantum harmonic oscillator with exactly this question. I told you I did my quantum mechanics course here at the University of Waterloo. That's where I did my undergrad. I was taught second or third year quantum mechanics by Mike Morris, who was a PhD student, I think, formerly with Kip Thorne, where they, you know, worked out the solution for wormholes and so on. He was doing some temporary position teaching courses at Waterloo. He introduced the harmonic oscillator to us. He introduced all sorts of weird examples in quantum mechanics, like his example of quantum tunneling was we considered tunneling of the universe from nothing, and yeah, we had some really cool quantum examples in that course. He just made this statement at one point in the course without even backing it up and blinking an eye. He's just like, well, we can model the universe by a bunch of quantum harmonic oscillators. In fact, we can model anything by quantum harmonic oscillators. So why do you think we might be able to do that? This is, you'll see this throughout this entire year. We'll see that almost all of field theory is built around quantum harmonic oscillators. So why is that?
Maybe because we can generate then all the Hamiltonians of that order.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, you'd imagine some arbitrary potential. We are interested maybe in being near equilibrium and looking for a solution. Maybe it's an impossible Hamiltonian to solve. So we look for expanding a solution around an equilibrium point and looking at properties of that expansion. So there's underlying that is really the most important reason why we use a quantum harmonic oscillator to solve everything, which is that we can solve it. That's a very general trend in theoretical physics. We model things by things that we can solve, even if it's going to be a bad model. Because if you can't solve it, what are you going to do? Fortunately, there's some basis for that here. We can solve the quantum harmonic oscillator, but also we should know that it can be an approximation, and maybe even we can understand how good of an approximation it is when we expand around some pretty general equilibrium point in some arbitrary theory. Okay, so you'll see this repeatedly as you study more sophisticated things in quantum field theory and so on. You start with a harmonic oscillator solution for all your fields. Usually that just describes uncoupled things. And then we add in coupling, which makes it impossible to solve, so we look for doing some perturbation theory around those harmonic oscillator solutions. That's basically 95% of theoretical physics. Is some sort of variant of that approach. As I said, a few of you came in late. I'm expecting that most of you have basically gone through the quantum harmonic oscillator before in the position representation, looked at solving for the wave functions and so on. We're going to take a different approach in this lecture, the algebraic approach. But let me just remind you briefly that we define a harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian. We can define it abstractly if we have position and momentum operators as an exact analogy to its classical Hamiltonian. Another advantage of the quantum harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian is it is quadratic in both position and momentum, and that makes it almost unique in that the question of quantization, taking a classical Hamiltonian and making a quantum one, quantization is normally a very poorly defined map. People use all sorts of sophisticated mathematical techniques like geometric quantization or canonical quantization, various approaches to try to find what is the correct quantum Hamiltonian that describes a classical one. And there's all sorts of pitfalls and problems in that active research area. But for the quantum harmonic oscillator, ones with quadratic kinetic and potential energies and position and momentum, there is essentially a unique quantization. So it's another advantage of the quantum harmonic oscillator. There's not really any uncertainty about whether we've written down a good quantum Hamiltonian to describe our classical system. It is, for reasons I'm not going to get into, sort of the right one. So if we imagine working in L2 of R, where we have our usual position representation for x and p, then we can write our Hamiltonian as a differential equation and solve for wave functions. And let's say we didn't know anything about the energies or the degeneracies initially. You might at least assume a countable set, which can show it is the case, and find the solutions of something like this, where H is now going to be a differential equation where X is multiplied by X, P is proportional derivative with respect to P. I'm going to assume that you've seen that type of thing before. Even if you haven't done the full solution, you should at least recognize that you could do it like when we did particle in a box. You just got to write down a Hamiltonian as a differential equation now. Solving that energy eigenvalue equation is just solving for the eigenfunctions of that differential equation and the energies. So we're going to take a different approach in this lecture. We're going to start by defining some convenient operators. In particular, let me define an operator A. With some constants that depend on the properties of my specific Hamiltonian. And it's going to be a linear combination of position and momentum. which I can think of abstractly or in the position representation on L2 of R. So I've just taken a complex linear combination of those two. Haven't motivated it at all yet, but we'll see how this particular operator turns out to be an incredibly useful tool in describing properties of the harmonic oscillator. In fact, for solving for its spectrum, what are its energy eigenvalues and energy eigenstates, and then going on from that and using that solution to study time dynamics, calculate expectation values, and so on. The first thing you might recognize is that I've taken something that's a combination of x and I times p. X and p are self-adjoint Hermitian operators. But A is not it's not even Hermitian. So A dagger is not equal to A. What is A dagger? Well, we can use the fact that X and P are self-adjoint and just the normal rules. And there it is. It's clearly different. Okay, we're going to treat A and A dagger then really as two different operators, very much in analogy to why when we study complex analytic functions, functions of Z and Z star, you're like, you know, when you first see that, it seems odd. How is Z star not itself just a function of Z? Well, it's very convenient in doing complex analysis to treat those two variables as distinct. We will treat these two operators as distinct entities in that same way, despite the fact that there's a clear relationship between the two just given by the adjoint. Okay. Let's give these things some names. So depending on whether you're approaching this from sort of the mathematical physics community or the physics community, you might give these different names. The physics community might be more inclined to call these things by the grandiose names, the annihilation operator. The mathematical community might be a bit more modest in the name and just say lowering. This one we'll call the creation operator. Or alternatively, erasing operator. A good chunk of the first half of this lecture will be motivating those terms. Why is that? What we will find is that this little algebra we've made out of A and A dagger is useful for starting with some harmonic oscillator energy state and generating the entire spectrum. And it generates it in a very simple way. The A operator goes down in energy. It takes harmonic oscillator energy eigenstates with some energy and gives me back something proportional to a harmonic oscillator energy eigenstate with one quanta lower in energy. The creation operator does the opposite. It goes up in energy. It goes up one state in the spectrum. So we're going to use these operators to generate a whole spectrum starting from a fiducial state. That's going to be the first sort of half hour of this lecture, is sort of now solving the quantum harmonic oscillator from the perspective of trying to use these operators and their properties to figure out what is the spectrum of the quantum harmonic oscillator. So let's see how that goes. It will be useful to invert these equations and find what are the position and momentum operators in terms of A daggers and A's. And this type of thing, again, should look very familiar when you sort of squint and think, oh, it's like I'm doing complex analysis But with operators now, I really want to think of A as like some sort of, it's a non-Hermitian, non-self-adjoint operator. It's sort of like an operator version of a complex number. And so I can think of its real and imaginary components, and that's precisely what the position and momentum are, or at least proportional to. So A is like an operator where its real component is proportional to X, its imaginary component is proportional to P, and A dagger is related accordingly. So just as it's very useful to describe oscillating systems classically by working in a phase space and saying, oh, let's go over to a complex analytic space and study things there, that's exactly what we're doing with the quantum harmonic oscillator now in an operator sense. That's where we're going. Okay, so where these things differ from just, you know, complex numbers Z and Z star is that we have a non-trivial commutation relation between A and A dagger. What is the commutation relation between A and A dagger? We can use the definitions. We can use the known commutation relation between X and P and work out what this was. You guys are quick. Maybe you've already figured out what it is. It's very simple. It's 1. Technically not 1, it's the identity operator. These units were picked basically to get that result. So I'm not going to derive that. Everybody clear that I can get that from the known commutation relations of X and P and those expressions? Yeah? Let's think, okay. Well, I've defined these new operators. What does my Hamiltonian look like expressed in terms of these operators? So I could take my harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian, p squared and x squared, as written up there. I could plug in the value, the expressions for x and p in terms of a dagger and a and simplify. Let me actually do the problem backwards, because then you can see it in just a couple steps. I'm going to argue that the Hamiltonian is proportional to A dagger A plus a constant. So let me show that. Let me show that this rearranged gives something that looks like the Hamiltonian. So let me write out what A dagger and A are. We just have to be careful here that we have operators and not numbers. So when we expand this out, we get an x squared, m squared, omega squared. We get something that depends on, what did I do? Sorry. Can I do that? Yeah. Okay. Recovered. I have a term in expanding this out that looks like the commutator of X and P. But I know that. That's an H bar. X squared plus p squared on m squared omega squared plus that's I h bar. And then let me multiply through by, I want to multiply through by m on m omega squared. Yeah. So I get 1 on h bar omega. Rearrange some terms. 1 on 2m. This one will give me half m omega squared x squared. Let me take that final constant right out. It just takes overall value of half. And then I recognize what's in here as the Hamiltonian of the quantum harmonic oscillator. So I have that the Hamiltonian is simply expressed in terms of these operators as this. Okay. This motivates me to define a new operator, N. And then write this Hamiltonian in this way. We call this thing the number operator. I haven't proven any properties of it yet, but we will show with time that it has eigenvalues which are non-negative integers. But for the moment, we just define this new operator in terms of these A daggers and A's. I've been arguing it's going to be easy to solve for the spectrum of the quantum harmonic oscillator by using properties of these. And here it makes it quite clear, if I knew what the spectrum of N was, then I know the spectrum of H. So really, the question of solving the spectral properties of the harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian has been turned into a question of what are the spectral properties of this new operator that we've just defined. So let me just write that out explicitly, that the eigenstates of N, which we might label by some eigenvalues nu sub N, labeled by N, maybe there's a degeneracy I. Here's the eigenvalue, here's the state. So those are the eigenstates and eigenvalues of N. These will give the eigenstates of H. Meaning that we have the same states as eigenstates, and the eigenvalues are just related by this equation. Okay, we have N defined in terms of A dagger and A. We're going to use these identities a few times, so let's just work out a couple very simple identities. Okay, let's see who's awake. What's that commutation relation? So up in the top right. So N is given in terms of A dagger and A. So what's the commutator of N and A?
It's going to be equal to the
A dagger
and A, because I can take out, in one of the cases, I can take A dagger out and A.
So that's the right method, but what you said was not quite right. It's not equal to the commutator of A dagger and A. When you take out the extra A, it hangs around.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So let me just be explicit about that. What you meant was, let's write that as A dagger and A, and I can take out A outside of the commutator that way, because it commutes with A. And then A dagger A, if we flip back to the last slide, we see the commutator of A and A dagger is 1. So the commutator of A dagger and A is minus 1. So that's minus A. So what's this one?
A dagger,
good. Plus A dagger, yes. Okay, so A and A dagger form this nice simple algebra. And we can throw N in, and it still is nice and closed as an algebra. That relates to what I said before with how quantizing a quantum harmonic oscillator is unique. Position and momentum form, together with the identity, a nice closed little algebra. We can throw in quadratic functions of position and momentum. We still get a nice closed little algebra that's just a sort of a natural extension of that original algebra of position and momentum. And it is essentially unique. Okay? Whereas if I tried to throw in cubic or higher order polynomials in x and p, or equivalently, if I tried to throw in higher order polynomials of a's and a daggers, then I would find that algebra does not close. And then there would be a lot of ambiguity that comes about in quantization in terms of now what is the right infinite dimensional algebra that contains the operators that I want to describe, what Hilbert spaces it act on, and so on. That's at a starting point, the whole question of the whole problem of quantization, where you really get some ambiguities. Once you're Hamiltonian together with the observables you want to have included in your theory, stop closing to a nice little algebra where it's clear from your basic kinematical observables how to represent that algebra, including a Hamiltonian. If that can be done easily, you have a good quantization. If that can't be done, you have problems. Okay, we're going to use those identities. So put a little circle around them in your note. They're going to come back. Okay, so let's get back to the point here. What are we doing? We want to figure out the spectrum of the Hamiltonian. We already know it, but we're trying to do it in this clever way. That means we don't have to solve differential equations and gain some additional structure as to the right observables for describing quantum harmonic oscillators. We want the spectrum of H. If we can figure out what the spectrum of this number operator is, then we basically have the spectrum of H. So let's spend a couple slides now working out some details of the spectral properties of the number operator. Okay, so I'm going to give a few lemmas here where we will sort of go through the proofs of those lemmas. And then we're going to come up with then a couple of theorems that really then pin down the spectrum. And for those, we're not necessarily going to give complete proofs. I'll just refer you to some other places where you can do that, or you might get a chance to try out some of those details in your tutorials. I should have put right at the beginning some good references. If you want sort of the standard physicist treatment of what we're doing in this lecture today, Cohen Tanuji. Tanuji et al., quantum mechanics, is sort of a standard but very physicist version. If you want a very good mathematical treatment, not only of this solution to the harmonic oscillator, but a general introduction to these type of algebraic techniques, then I like generalized coherent states. I think that's what it's called, by Perelimov. That has a very rigorous treatment of this and many of these extensions that I alluded to other types of systems, and the general techniques of that we're going to introduce today. Okay, so I said we're going to introduce a bunch of lemmas, which we'll prove, and then a couple of theorems, of which I'll just give a proof sketch. Lemma one, the eigenvalues, nu n of n, are non-negative. And this is pretty easy to see, because we have that n is a dagger a. If we consider these eigenstates, mu n i, Let's look at the expectation value of A dagger A for those states. So on the one hand, if those are the eigenstates of N, of A dagger A, then we get the eigenvalue. Which is, that's just the eigenvalue. On the other hand, I recognize what's written there on the left. I can squint my eyes and view that as the norm of the vector A nu n I. Squared. Right? And this is clearly non-negative, so that means these things are non-negative. Okay, good. We've already proven some properties of the spectrum for this number operator and therefore the Hamiltonian. It was maybe sort of obvious even when we originally wrote the Hamiltonian that it's a sum of two quadratic terms with positive coefficients. It's got to be a positive operator. It's not going to have negative eigenvalues. Good. So our spectrum is bounded from below. There's the physics explanation. Okay, lemma two. This one's a bit more involved. This says, well, it's got two parts. If the eigenvalue of a particular state is 0, then I can say something about what is A on that state. This has to equal 0. Okay. I'll just say this now. You guys know in a quantum harmonic oscillator solution, we often just label the ground state by a vector with a ket with a 0 in it. This is obvious, but there's a distinction between the vector describing the ground state, which we label by 0, and the 0 vector, which is, it's a vector in the Hilbert space with no norm, right? 0 norm. So we're not saying that, acting with A on that state gives the ground state. We're saying it annihilates the state altogether. There is then the 0 vector left over. Okay, so let's give, that's just part A of this lemma, but let's give a proof of that part first. Okay, so we showed above in lemma one that the norm of A nu I, the norm squared of the vector A nu I is equal to the eigenvalue. And so if that's equal to 0, the only vector with norm 0 is the 0 vector. So we haven't proven that there is an eigenvalue 0, but if there is one, then the state corresponding to that eigenvalue, if I act on it with the operator A, I get the 0 vector. Of course, you know the answer will show that there is such a state with 0 eigenvalue, that the associated eigenvector is not the 0 vector, it's the ground state. It's a non-zero vector, but we just label it by 0. And when I act on it with that annihilation operator, I get the 0 vector. Okay. Let's continue with lemma two. There's a part B to this. So the spectrum's non-negative, so it can be 0 or it can be greater than 0, the eigenvalue. If it's greater than 0, then A on that eigenstate is a non-zero vector. And it's a non-zero eigenvector of n. with eigenvalue nu n minus 1. So this is the reason why we call that operator a annihilation operator or the lowering operator. I'll give you the proof, but it will take eigenstates with some non-zero eigenvalue, and when I act on it with A, I'll get a new eigenstate of the number operator, but now with a smaller eigenvalue. So I've lowered the eigenvalue. Well, I've gone to a different energy level in the spectrum. I've lowered the eigenvalue. Okay, let's give a little proof of this part of the lemma. Okay, so what we're trying to do is argue that this guy is an eigenstate of the number operator, and this is the eigenvalue. So let's see if we can act with that state, on that state with the number operator, and use some of the known algebraic properties of these operators to find out what the that it is an eigenstate, and find out what the eigenvalue is. So we have the number operator acting on this state. We haven't proven that that state is non-zero yet, but we do know that that the state in there has an eigenvalue that's not zero. So let me just use some properties. What I really want to do is say, well, I don't know yet what is that this state is an eigenstate of n, but I do know that this state is an eigenstate of n. So really, you can see what I want to do. I want to pull through n through that operator and have it act on that state. So let me just, of course, it's an operator, it doesn't commute, but let me just use the commutation relation to do that. So I can write that as having pulled it through A times N, but I have to add the commutator of N and A. And that's acting now on the state nu N I. And I know what that commutator is. That was one of those useful identities that we had to work out. So that first term, let me break this up into two terms. The first term is A acting on N on that. And then the second term, the commutator of N and A was minus A. So this just gives minus A acting on that state. And we know that that state is an eigenstate of n with eigenvalue nu n, which is non-zero. And so we can write this as nu n a on nu n I minus a on nu n I. And let's just collect those terms together. And that's nu n minus 1 acting on a nu n I. So that's exactly what we wanted. We take the fact that we know that this is an eigenstate of n, and the algebraic properties of our little nice algebra here to say that this is an eigenstate of n, so if I act on it with A, little bit of working with that algebra tells me that that new thing is at least proportional to, well, I mean, we haven't proven that it's normalized, and it's not, but we've proven that that thing is also an eigenstate of n, possibly an unnormalized vector with an eigenvalue one less. So we've gone down the spectrum. So let's just revisit what these two lemmas tell us. There's a non-negative spectrum. There's a bottom. If there's a zero eigenvalue, then there's a ground state such that if I try to lower it or annihilate it, I get the zero vector. Otherwise, all the other states are such that they can be, all the other eigenstates are ones that when I act on it with A, I get the state with one eigenvalue lower. Questions? Good? Okay, good. Let's look at the properties of a dagger, this raising or creation operator. So this one's easier, it follows the same way. So lemma 3, this is really properties of a. A dagger, nu and I. Okay, so here we have the ket a dagger, nu and I is always non-zero. And B, this ket is an eigenvector of n with eigenvalue nu n plus 1. Let me just sketch out the proof of B. A proof of A follows the same way in just looking at the norm. Okay, so what is n acting on a dagger, nu and I? This follows very similarly to before, so let me just quickly sketch it out. I want to say that this is bringing it through a dagger n plus the commutator of n a dagger acting on nu and I. That is going to be two terms. The first one gives me n acting on nu and I, which is nu n. And I leave the, sorry, no, so n there. The second term gives me just a dagger, nu and I. The commutator of n and a dagger was just a dagger. So that's nu n plus 1. So this tells me that I can go with the a dagger operator up the spectrum, and that it's not bounded from above. I can keep going up and up arbitrarily. For any, you know, I think of a large energy eigenvector, I can create an even larger one by acting on it with a dagger. It's unbounded from above. Sort of expected that, but it's bounded from below. Okay. So let's finish off this idea of the spectrum. We need to do a few more things in order to show, yes, those eigenvalues are actually integers, that there really is a state with eigenvalue 0. That's the ground state. And then we have to show that all the other states are non-degenerate, that this label I is really not needed. And then we want to make sure that we understand, here we've shown that A and A dagger act on eigenstates to go up or down, but there it may not give a normalized state back. In fact, it doesn't, so we have to work out exactly what is that action, figure out what is the constant of proportionality when they give us a new energy eigenstate. So we're going to do all of those things, and on a few of those aspects, I'll just sort of outline how you show it. Okay, first of all, the non-negative nu n is really all you need. The fact that it's non-negative is all you need, together with those lemmas, to show that there has to be a state with eigenvalue 0. because if there wasn't, I could keep lowering until I got non-zero states with negative eigenvalues, which I know is a contradiction. So this implies there exists a ground state. There has to be, okay, so there has to be a bottom to this spectrum if you have a non-negative spectrum of the Hamiltonian, then there has to be a state with lowest energy. I haven't shown that it's non-degenerate, but it has to exist one. We call it the zero state. Now, that has to be one corresponding to eigenvalue zero, satisfying A on zero is equal to the zero vector from lemma one. And what's the proof sketch? Basically, if A on 0 was not equal to 0, then by lemma 1, sorry, lemma 2, it would be an eigenvector. Should say non-zero eigenvector with eigenvalue nu n minus 1 equals nu n minus 1, which is negative. So that leads to a contradiction. Okay. So we want to say that this ground state 0 satisfying A 0 equals 0 is unique, meaning non-degenerate. Here's a challenge for you guys who are more mathematically inclined. We can prove this, but the only way I know how to prove this property is actually to resort to the original sort of differential equation picture. That I would do this by solving how does A act on zero? A, if I wrote it out in terms of the position representation, looks like x plus h bar over m omega d by dx, acting on some wave function. And we're trying to solve for that equal to 0 in L2 of r. And it's not hard to show that there is a unique solution to that differential equation. That now, that's the nice thing about this equation, rather than looking at it as the action of the Hamiltonian, this equation is a first-order differential equation, and it's very easy to show that there's a unique solution in L2 of r to that differential equation. I said at the beginning I like this whole algebraic approach because you don't have to appeal to working in that specific position representation in L2 of r. Somehow you can just use the abstract properties of the algebra. But I don't know how to prove that condition, that the ground state is non-degenerate, using these purely algebraic techniques. So if you have an idea, I'd love to hear it, yeah?
Suppose I have two harmonic oscillators which are uncoupled, and I want to define, and then I have an A and an A prime, right? And then I define the ground state by saying it's destroyed by A, and I don't mention A prime, then that's not unique, right? What's the difference with this?
Yeah, so it's clear that there needs to be some condition on what is the Hilbert space of your system and how the Hamiltonian acts on it. So I want a condition that will look like irreducibility under this algebra generated by A's and A daggers or by position and momentum.
Which means you're assuming that your Hilbert space is just that unique ground state and then building up with A daggers.
Yes.
So you're making the assumption.
So, yeah, so.
My point is that I don't think there is a way to algebraically do this. There's a place where this comes from, where you know that there's no other harmonic oscillators or anything. So there you can deal with stuff, but here you don't have enough information.
Yeah, I mean, what we did here, you're exactly right. Here, by picking L2 of R, I've said this a particular representation of this oscillator. The Hamiltonian is acting on this space and this space only. And then I can show uniqueness. Yeah, if I tensored that with some other space, then of course it's not going to be non-degenerate. So it's a very good point. I want to have some framing of that condition when I say, here's the Hamiltonian. I'm trying to solve it for this system. Yes, I need to specify more than a Hamiltonian. I need to specify the space it acts on. But I would like to phrase that as a condition of something like irreducibility of the algebra, rather than saying, oh, let's refer to this specific example of L2 of R.
But irreducibility of this algebra is exactly saying that the ground state is unique. Is it the ground state is not unique, you just have two completely decoupled versions. You have a zero and a zero prime, on both of which you can work on with eight daggers, and both of which are destroyed by eights.
Yeah, okay. So if I mean, maybe you're giving me the answer I want, which is just a statement that irreducibility of this algebra on this Hilbert space proves that this ground state is non-degenerate. I guess I would, I mean, I believe that. I would like to see a statement of that proof. So maybe we can discuss that.
Suppose it's not unique, then you have two of them which are completely decoupled, which means it's not an irreducible.
Yeah, what you're saying is an intuitive statement about why that's true, but I don't feel like that's a proof that you can have.
Two invariant sub-representations of the algebra generated by these, if you take two unique ones, and that will contradict irreducibility. So, yeah, that's a proof.
It's a proof by contradiction, basically. You say, assume it's not degenerate, and show that as a result of, assume it's degenerate, and as a result of that, I can then prove that the representation is not reducible on that space. Therefore, irreducibility is sufficient to prove non-degeneracy. Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. Good. Okay. Well, thank you for that. I mean, I was struggling with that this morning, trying to think of a way of expressing it. And I think that's exactly right. Okay. So we have that non. Sorry. Yeah, okay. Well, because the spectrum is bounded from below, there has to be a ground state. There has to be a state with the lowest energy because of the bound of the spectrum. So then it's a question of showing what is its eigenvalue. And here it's, like I said, it's just a brief sketch. I mean, you need some details in there. But if there's a ground state, it has to be the one corresponding to eigenvalue 0. Okay, so we now have a non-degenerate ground state for this oscillator. Let's now talk about the rest of the spectrum. And so now we can generate a set of unique eigenstates, nu n equal to n, using lemma 3. Lemma 3, recall, was the lemma for this raising or creation operator, starting from the ground state 0 and using just a, you know, doing it recursively, that I can create a state which I'll call n plus 1 from any state n by raising it. And this is for some constant that makes it a normalized state. So just some terminology here. This is a canonical, the canonical example of a spectrum-generating algebra, is that the power of this A and A dagger algebra is that I can use it to identify properties of the spectrum. But then it's more than that. Once I've honed in on a special state, like the ground state, I can then use applications of that algebra to make all my whole spectrum, all of my energy eigenstates. That technique, is particularly powerful if you want now to generalize it to all sorts of representations of different types of groups on a Hilbert space. You can do a similar type of construction for compact groups like SUN. You can do it even for non-compact groups. This one's non-compact, SU11 and so on. You can use similar techniques, identify the right algebra, identify properties of a good fiducial state, and then create the entire spectrum of the system from just properties of the algebra. Here it's nice and simple. We have raising and lowering just up and down a single ladder. In general, you can have multiple raising and multiple lowering operators, and you get a much more complex structure, possibly with degeneracies. But here you can show from the non-degeneracy of 0, I really get a fully non-degenerate spectrum just out of applications of A. Any questions on that? Let's figure out what that coefficient C is. That's pretty easy to do just from looking at expectation values of things like this. This is what will determine what that coefficient Cn is. Where did that come from? Sorry, I just took this expression, and let's close it with a Bra vector n. I can take the complex conjugate of that equation, and that gives me C star n. Let me pick Cn to be real and non-negative without loss of generality. Let me just define that to be a real and non-negative. That's just a choice of the phases of my state, so that's really without loss of generality. How I define the phase of my energy eigenstates is arbitrary. Okay, so therefore we have A of n plus 1 is Cn of n. Okay, so let's use the known commutation relations between A and A dagger. We're going to solve for what is Cn using just this property of the algebra. Let's think about how A dagger, the commutator, acts on a number state n. It acts as A dagger minus A dagger A on n. Of course, that has to equal, because of this identity, that has to just equal the number state n, because it acts as the identity. And so this tells me, if I figure out how does A dagger act on n, well, A dagger acts on n to give me Cn n plus 1. Then A acts on Cn n plus 1 to give me Cn plus 1. Cn back on n. And then how does A dagger A act on N? A acts on N to give me C N minus 1 on the state N minus 1. And then A dagger takes it back up to the state N and another C N minus 1. So the second term in there is C N minus 1 squared. And those things, the difference of those two things is 1. And that together with the fact that we can do a special case of that down at the ground state, we find that C0 squared has to equal 1. It's a special case of applying this guy on the state n equals 0. The second term there will annihilate it. So I just get a contribution from that first term. And that tells me C0 squared is equal to 1. Then that's just the recursion relation now to solve for all the others. It tells me C1 squared has to equal 2. And dot, 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 Cn squared has to equal n. OK, so I wanted them real and non-negative. So let me take the positive square root and define things as such. So this was the fact that we learned that spectrum was integers. And then this was just solving for those coefficients. That allows me to then figure out what is the spectrum for the full Hamiltonian. I said if we know the spectrum of n, we know the spectrum of the Hamiltonian. It has the same number states as energy eigenstates. And the eigenvalues are given by this. Any questions on that? Happy? Okay, so there's just a picture, you know, out of some text. We've got a ground state with there's a number state 0 associated with that state. So its eigenstate under the number operator is 0. Its eigenstate under the Hamiltonian is h bar omega on 2. And then there are unique states equally spaced up the spectrum. I should have put the dot, dot, dot there. There's 3. So all of those energy levels of the quantum harmonic oscillator are equally spaced, multiples of h bar omega. That's almost, you could take that as a defining property of a quantum harmonic oscillator. And in fact, when you know, you've heard this many times, when physicists use the expression that the spectrum is harmonic, they mean that it is an equally spaced spectrum. When people talk about an anharmonic spectrum, they mean not equally spaced differences between energy levels. Okay? The way that a harmonic system behaves when you couple it to things is very different than the way an anharmonic thing behaves when they're on and off resonance. Okay, so in the remaining little bit of time, first of all, let me just very briefly sketch out just not the some of the power of this algebraic approach. Not just in terms of deriving the spectrum, which you're like, I already knew what the spectrum of the oscillator was because we did solve it as a differential equation in L2 of R. Once you get used to working with creation and annihilation operators, you never go back. It's easy to calculate things like expectation values. It's easy to calculate things like time evolution and so on. Let me give you a bit of an example involving expectation values. Say I wanted to know what is the expectation value of position of the position operator in the ground state. If you wanted to do this, you know, using your Schrödinger solutions in L2 of R, then this would involve integrating your Hermite polynomials with a Gaussian envelope and so on. Now it is a much simpler algebraic expression. I just write x in terms of my creation and annihilation operators. And then I use the fact that I know exactly that zero is a number state. I know that A acts on zero to give the zero vector. A dagger acts on zero to give the one vector, and that the zero and one vectors are orthogonal. This immediately shows that the expectation value of the position operator is zero, and in fact, any expectation value of a linear combination of A's and A daggers in a energy eigenstate is going to be zero just from these properties. Let's do a non-trivial example. Let's work out what is x squared. So this involves, aside from constants, just recognizing that I need to have a bunch of terms. A squared, a dagger, that's different from a dagger a, and then I have a dagger squared. And you can see in using this latter argument, because we're in the ground state, one term's taking me up to, that doesn't connect. One term's taking me down, that annihilates the ground state. That third term there is also taking me down, that annihilates. It's only that second term in my expansion I can think of in just in terms of stepping through this ladder. It's only that second term in this expansion that's going to contribute anything. In fact, what you often do with these types of expressions is you try to expand out any observable you're interested in calculating the expectation value of in a way that picks out these preferred terms, so-called normal ordering of your operators. You'll see more of that later. It's only that one term that's going to contribute, and that ends up contributing just a factor of one. So we get that. Non-zero expectation value of x squared. That lets me work out that the uncertainty in x is given by this. I can do a similar calculation and work out what the uncertainty in p is. And you've probably seen this as a result when you first studied quantum harmonic oscillator. In the ground state, the product of uncertainties in position and momentum is equal to h bar 2, which saturates the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. The main thing here is that this is just a simple example of a very general technique for working out expectation values of operators in terms of creation and annihilation operators. So it's a very useful approach. Okay, in the remaining time, we'll take 10 more minutes maybe and introduce some properties of coherent states. How many people have seen coherent states before? Most of you, good. Okay, so coherent states are very easily expressed in terms of this algebraic notation. What do I want to cover? Let's skip the entire Heisenberg vial. We'll come back to that. And when we do Wigner functions, you can you could define the coherent states just in terms of these number states using the standard expression. Let's just, in terms of this algebra A dagger and A, let's just think of some nice properties of these coherent states, which are much, they can, any of them can be taken as defining properties and maybe are a bit more natural than thinking about it in terms of a particular basis here. So I'm not going to show that these are equivalent definitions. We won't have time. But here's one way that you could define what are the coherent states. They are eigenstates of A. meaning that A on alpha in a coherent state gives me back a complex eigenvalue and that same coherent state. So the ground state is a coherent state with eigenvalue 0. But you can check that any of those states up there are also eigenstates of the annihilation operator. But it doesn't get annihilated by the annihilation operator. It's an eigenstate with non-zero eigenvalue. You could take that as a definition and solve for that solution. Another one is to think of these states as a orbit of the harmonic oscillator ground state under a group generated by a phase-space translation, a group generated by the position and momentum operator. So I can imagine a group of phase-space displacements given by things that are generated by translations and momentum boosts. Since I've overloaded my notation, I want x and p to be classical variables outlining my phase space. I put the hats back on the operators to distinguish them. I can think about, it makes sense from a harmonic oscillator. What happens if I displace the vacuum? Then I can show that I get a coherent state. It's much easier to express this group, which is here written as a unitary generated by a linear combination of position and momentum. I should be able to think of instead a unitary generated by a linear combination of creation and annihilation operators. So I could define sort of an equivalent but different parameterization of this same unitary group as one given by this. So I put alpha with A dagger and subtract alpha star with A. That makes that a unitary operator. You can check that. This turns out to be equivalent if you use Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff. This is minus alpha squared on 2. E to the alpha A dagger e to the minus alpha star A. And then it's quite nice to see when I write, how does this unitary act on the harmonic oscillator vacuum? You notice that because the vacuum is not just an eigenvector of A, but actually a zero eigenvector of A, that when this term acts on the vacuum, we just get 1. When this term, together with this overall phase, acts on the vacuum, we end up generating the coherent state. So there is a nice, convenient representation of how to think of the coherent states as displaced vacua under this unitary of phase-space displacements, but choosing a nice complex analytic representation for it rather than working with position and momentum. And the other thing that people sometimes do, and I'm almost putting this as a bit of a caveat, is try to define coherent states as minimum uncertainty states. All of the coherent states do satisfy delta x equals h bar over 2m omega, and delta p is equal to h m omega on 2, exactly the same as for the vacuum. There's some tricks with this particular definition, though, because if I imagined a harmonic oscillator with a different frequency but the same Hilbert space, then its vacuum is distinct as a state from the original harmonic oscillator vacuum. It will have a different spread in its Gaussian ground state wave function in x and p as a result of that different frequency. And all of its coherent states, the coherent states of a oscillator with the same Hilbert space but with a different frequency, so a different Hamiltonian, different spectrum, that is a different ground state. So all of the coherent states defined by either of those definitions, they all are also minimum uncertainty states. They also satisfy these two equations, but for different omegas. Okay, so when I multiply those things together, omega disappears, and I find that they are all saturating the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. But the coherent states for an oscillator with one frequency don't look like coherent states for an oscillator with a different frequency. Those are all different minimum uncertainty states, in a sense, for different oscillators. So that whole range of states, if I viewed it just in terms of the frequency of one oscillator, people often call them squeeze states, states where I've taken the uncertainty in one direction and reduced it a bit at the expense of the uncertainty in its momentum, or vice versa. It's important to remember when trying to define coherent states in terms of minimum uncertainty states that there is this ambiguity in terms of, am I fixing the frequency of the oscillator, or am I considering all possible oscillators with all possible frequencies on that same Hilbert space? If I really wanted to just say I'm defining states that saturate the Heisenberg uncertainty principle as minimum uncertainty states, then I would find I get much more than this set of coherent states. I get the set of all coherent states for all oscillators on that same Hilbert space. Questions with that? So I haven't shown it all. I mean, it's pretty easy to show that various of these things give that definition up there. It's maybe less obvious to show that 1 and 2 are all, and 3 are all equivalent. But there's some details of that in either Cohen-Tanucci or in Perelimov, if you want to see those. Any other questions? OK, let's end it for today. Thank you.